my side of the microphone. From the green light to the speed trap, Ray Reno and Jody calls them as they seize them, and you better believe them. Here, relevant news, biased opinion, and outright nonsense regarding every aspect of automotive culture. Gasp! With mechanical trickery never before broadcast over FCC-regulated airwaves. Thrilled to the explosive tension as Ray and Joe cuss each other down track, barrel roll across the finish line, laughing at certain disaster as they shake hands with the devil. All that and so much more at high noon this Sunday on the Motormouth Radio Hour. Call in and speak live with the Wizards of Speed and the Live Eat, Ray Carino and Joe D. Bring the whole family. Kids under 12 get in free every Sunday at noon on WHBC. Take the Hempstead Turnpike to the Meadowbrook Parkway and look for the no parking on the expressway and no express service on the parkway sign. Go right on Highway 24 to Garden City. $2 all-day parking includes pit pass.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed.
We are going the distance for the distance and the speed today on Motormouth Radio, Long Island's only automotive talk show.
We always go the distance.
With your host,
we get there.
Ray Guarino and his wingman, Matt the Con End guy trying to get up from a crouch position, Joe D. Joe,
is that WD-40?
Yeah, we need a little bit of that glucosin and chondroitin and conglost.
Screw that. I need a crane.
Yeah, the lithium or something. But yeah, we are here today. We're going to have a great show. And you guys
Who do we have today, Ray?
We have a great guest today. We have Mr. Tony D'Agostino from Tony's Parts. We're going to get in touch with him a little later. He'll call us. You know him from Graveyard Cars. He's the guy who Mark Warman calls in and does the duels with about what's correct and what's not correct on Mopars. And Tony, in his own right, has a great business that caters to the Mopar in general parts business. And we'll be speaking with him. You can follow us. You want to see what we do? MotormouthRadio.com. Of course, we're on Twitter, Motormouth Radio, and Joe's favorite Instagram, which is
Real_MotormouthRadio.
Right, as well as a Faccia Bruta. We're on that too. We post all that stuff. So if you want to see what we do, that's where you should follow us when we're not on Sundays. Like us, follow us, and we'll surprise you with some cool
stuff. Be kind
to
us, send us donuts.
Yeah, we do some weird things that we do like to share with
us. We accept pastry anytime.
We do. And sometimes even a little coffee. No, that's nice too.
Well, yeah, you got to have the coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing. Get us follow us on that bit, and if you want for the first segment of the show, you can call us at 516-572-7440. After that, we'll have Tony on, and you'll have to just sit back and listen and enjoy.
Yeah.
So
this will be interesting because there's tons of other for other car companies. There's a lot of different places, but Mopar.
Yeah, Mopar's always been that brand that's been. Well, it's always been big because even going back in the day, back into the 70s, we all had friends. I had certainly had Mopar friends that were very, very.
Oh, me too, yeah.
And they were just like the Chevy guys. I don't know. And this is just my impression, and it's the way I came up. I consider myself like a GM guy.
Right.
I like all GMs. And it's not that I have owned some Mopars. I've owned very few Fords. But, my love goes back to GM, whereas the Mopar guys seem to be like dyed in the wool. Like, they got to get, Mopar socks.
Seriously. They are very loyal.
Which is cool. I mean, it keeps the it good. It supports the hobby and it keeps things moving along, which is great. I mean, that's the way things should be. But so Tony now has his the parts business, which is great because that caters to that genre and it's quality stuff. So that's really what you want when you want to.
Yeah, you got to find somebody that goes out and tracks down the real stuff. I mean, Anybody can find this crap, you know, can find crap, but...
Yeah. We, on the other hand, end up working on old stuff that's questionable in nature and, you know, is just to keep it on the road, or, like, sometimes new stuff that you get to play with and diagnose and figure out who the heck was in there last time.
Right.
With a hatchet into the wire harness, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was fun. Conan the Mechanic.
That was a good one. I like that.
They're like, oh, yeah, go look at Nissan. Nissan has no power door locks. What happened? I don't know. And then...
Right.
I'm looking under there, like, the dashboard's apart and all kinds of stuff is flying all over the place, stuff stuck to the windshield, stuff jammed in the headliner. And one of the other guys that was working on it yesterday goes, oh, yeah, we ripped the alarm out a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
Huh? Yeah, it wouldn't stop going off, so we ripped it out. And I'm like, but what about the one? Oh, we caught it.
Yeah. Great.
So... At that point, out comes the wiring diagram. Grab the trusty power probe.
Yeah.
You know, there was a long time that I really had a fear of them things. You know, as one of the guys at the shop said, you like that thing? I blew up so much stuff. And I said, yeah, but, like, you got to know where you're probing.
Yes.
You know, and...
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was really good because now, rather than sitting there running 52 jumper wires, we flashing? Are we blinking?
Good eyes, Joe.
I'm trying.
We're going to go to the phones here and say, hi, you're on with the Motor Mouths.
Good morning, Ray and Chris. How are you guys today? It's Tom from Massapequa.
Hey, Tom, what's happening?
Hey, guys, I just stumbled on some new information, and maybe you could help me learn more about it. I grew up in Hicksville, and it seems like many of my contemporaries, old cousins and friends from school, their grandfather was a great racer of some sort, Caruso. Do you know anything about Caruso racing?
No, not off the top of my head. What kind of racing did he do, Tom?
I'm not sure, but I went on, they have on a Facebook page, right? It looks like he has midgets and other things and maybe Le Mans cars from like 50 years ago.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah,
it's new to me. I didn't know anything about it. I asked them about it on Facebook. They suggested I go to there's a museum in Las Vegas for Caruso Racing.
Okay. Well, do you know if it's
the guy was from Hicksville. They got pictures of my friends from high school when they were 5 years old sitting in these open cars that were, you know, really racing cars, you know, of the day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's just something we could look into, and I thought I'd share it with you. And I'd like to learn more about it. And some of the stuff that looks, there's some refurbished stuff or whatever in the museum that looks really cool or rebuilt. Mm-hmm. So there must be more to it. But it could be interesting local racing lore that we're not aware of.
Yeah, well, there's plenty of that in Long Island, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm certainly not aware of it, but that doesn't mean... I mean, there's plenty of guys that raced, so... Yeah, when you find out more, let us know. Keep us in touch on that. That's interesting stuff.
Okay, great. And if anybody is interested, I think it's Caruso Racing Museum in Vegas on Facebook.
Okay, very good.
Okay, yeah, because...
All right, guys, thanks a lot. Enjoy the show.
I have to Google the crap out of that one.
Thanks, Tom.
You got it. Thanks, man.
All right. Well, there you go. So,
look at that.
Another one crept out of the woodworks. I've never heard of that one. I'm thinking like Enrico Caruso. I don't know, like opera. You know, like,
I'm thinking the guy that used to take his sunglasses off on TV and they would start playing The Who.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. See where my head's at.
Yeah. Wow.
What was that? CSI Miami. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, that was out of left field. But you never know. That's it. You never know what's going to come at you this way from on this show. So. You never see it coming. So the alarm, Conan the electrician.
Conan the Mechanic, I named him, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, pretty much it was just like, I never knew you could do wiring with a chainsaw.
Oh, boy, yeah.
There was stuff flying all over the place. And then, of course, whoever had originally installed the alarm did not believe in either electrical tape, butt connectors. So they just, like, you know, would strip and twist. I was like, are you kidding me? And was just stuff flying, just like stuff.
Tapped
in.
This past week, I had to wire in an engine block heater on the flatbed that I had to fix the gas tank straps for, and found that the last guy to do that just took the wires and literally just twisted them and then taped them. You know, so of course I use butt connectors and string tubing and all the right stuff.
Yeah.
And then yesterday I got tapped. Mike had asked me to help him out rewire the 220 line for the forklift
right.
He brought over. And again, you know, I found the guy who, when the boss wasn't looking, decided he was going to use all the electrical tape in his shop because I unrolled a 4-foot length of electrical. I was just like laughing, like, when does this end? It was like
he really forked that over.
He sure did. It was like clowns, like going into coming out of a
phone.
When is it going to stop? It was like,
when they pull the thing out of their sleeve and it just keeps going and stuff. Yeah.
Oh my god. So I guess it was
the
a week.
And that's on like 220.
Yeah.
The insulating properties are probably not optimal, say the least.
No.
Yikes.
Yeah, it was kind of bizarre. But, you know,
wire for fire.
Yeah, there's a time and a place for everything, and there's a way to do it. And, you know, and what he had done, too, is he whoever it was, had there's two screws that hold the clamshell cover together.
Right.
And somebody, Conan, the screwdriver mechanic, tightened one so tight that the little plastic ridge on the shelf on that clamshell broke. So now the screw couldn't hold it, so it popped up. More electrical tape.
Right. More cowbell, more tape. See, yeah, it's all the same.
I fixed that one with a little number 6 washer, put it in a vise, used the reamer so that the screw would fit through it, and that washer became now the ledge.
Do they make fun of you when you do stuff like that?
Well,
I get made fun of. Like yesterday when I was fixing it, when I was doing the wiring on that Nissan, you know, I had the, I had the wiring diagram, the power probe. I used scanned it to determine it was the switch that wasn't sending the signal Nissan calls the smart entrance control unit.
Right.
And you know, they're like, "What are you doing?" I'm figuring out the problem.
You saw, and other people can see if they go to Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, because I cross-post all of them.
Right.
Working on the Buick at the shop, I have the ability, luckily, to have access to a plotter. So I plotted the schematic for the Buick, and like, with magnet
oh, I was
to gonna the hood.
Say, where did
so,
you, I was going to ask you where you found that thing, because that would be great for me. Because
I made it.
Oh, okay.
If you need one made, just send me the file. I'll do it for you. I'll plot it out for you.
Yeah, because
no
I mean,
problem. And color, too.
Yeah, I like the color part because I have my colored pencils with me all the time.
The only problem is, like, Matt Coman Bryan had sent me one for Mike's Mach 1 for the Mustang.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was, like, at 8x10, maybe 11x17, it would be okay. But when I blew it up, it got very, very grainy and very
right.
Not real sharp or easy to read.
Yeah.
So it depends on the initial source and, you know.
Of course, because this stuff is always all copies from stuff that came from back right. in the day. And it all depends on, you know, whether the guy, when they copied it back in the day, they wiped off the glass on the copy machine. You know?
Right. Now, the Buick schematic I did get online. I'm thinking I got it from the CDs that you had given me, the Mitchell stuff. But no, I got it off of, it was like a Buick site. And again, it got a little fuzzy, but you could still see it well enough to... You know, to track your lens.
That's the best part. Yeah, as long as you're able to make it out, because it's depending on what exactly you're trying to do, it's all a matter of just figuring. Sometimes you look at a diagram just for the lay of the land. Okay, well here's power, here's ground. All right, and then, oh look at that, they got a switch there. Like a lot of Japanese cars have a door lock, a switch wired into the door lock that if you can't lock the doors while the door is open.
Oh, yeah.
So you can't get locked out.
My Mazda's like that.
Right, yeah, a lot of cars. Toyota's Nissan, which is kind of cool because, you know, some of us get out of the car in not necessarily the most attentive state.
I got into the habit, you know, I saw Mike do this, when I'm going to do something with a car, especially a car I don't know.
Right.
And I open the door, I put the key in, and I just run the window at least halfway down.
Oh, yeah.
Before I close that
door.
Oh,
that's another thing they make fun of me about.
Oh, yeah.
Why you do that? It's cold. I'm like...
I was locked out of my daughter's car one day. In the winter, and my car was, she was behind mine in the driveway. I had to move hers, and I had to come here to do the show, and now her car was locked itself, and it was running, and we had one key.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So you used a spare key, i.e. a rock?
No, basically, I went over to Colvin. I borrowed the tool set that they have with the wedges and the big wedgie thing. To get in, because it was a coupe. It was a Stratus, which 3 years ago today got totaled, so.
Right.
But when it was still in the fleet, it was, Yeah, and then I had to go and get a copy of the key made. And I made just one of the blanks that would just do the door and I guess during ignition, it wouldn't start the car or whatever. It wasn't a transponder key. It was just a
Plain Jane key. I had that earlier this week. I had one of my guys call me up. He goes, you want to come look at this Toyota for me? I got no spark. I did a crank sensor. I did this. I did that. And I says, I think I got to need a computer, but, you know, I want you to look at it first. So I'm like, okay, well, calm down. First of all, did you pull codes? Because that's my first question I ask everybody. He goes, no, what do you mean? It doesn't even start. Well, you need codes. So it had an anti-theft code.
Oh, there you go.
And I says, is there a little red light kind of twinkling at you when you try to start the car? He goes, yeah. Mm-hmm. I go, okay.
Right.
And he said, so long story short, the customer had a key made just to open the door.
Uh-huh.
All right. The battery had gone dead on this car, so that he towed it to the shop. And he was going to put a battery in there. And once you put the battery in there, now, of course, it doesn't start because the customer gave him a key without a transponder in it.
Right.
And I was like, okay, go to the guy's house, preferably about 2 in the morning, kick the door, and get the right key.
There you go.
Calls me back a little later. Yeah, car starts.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're gonna stop this now. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back with Tony D'Agostino.
Oh, good.
So hang with us for a little bit. Let's, we were talking about the race car museum. Let's get our race car yayas kicking. And
go for it.
We'll come back in a few minutes with more on 90.3 WHPC.
The land of race car yayas. The land where you can't change lanes. The land where large fuzzy dice.
This show is brought to you by the NYCB Theater at Westbury, who presents Procol Harum with special guest Jamo's Jazz Band in the Still There Will Be More tour on Thursday, February 28th at 8 p.m. More information can be found online at thetheateratwestbury.com.
Hey, have you seen DJ Solero?
No, why?
Well, he was supposed to be here right now to tell everyone about his show, The Rare Groove Session, but I can't find him anywhere.
I'll look for him. Maybe he got something to eat.
Food? He went to get food? I mean, who can eat at a time like this?
Relax. I'm sure everyone can figure out when they can listen to the most incredible music from the 60s and 70s that they may not have heard before.
But what if they can't? What if they never figure out when The Rare Groove Session is on? What happens then, huh? I don't want to live in a world where no one knows about The Rare Groove Session.
Hey guys, ready to tell everyone about RGS?
DJ Solero, where the f*** have you been?
I was getting something to eat.
How can you eat at a time like this?
What are you talking about?
Don't mind her. Go ahead and tell everybody when to listen.
Okay, whatever. So if you're looking for some mind-blowing music, check out The Rare Groove Session. Now at a brand new time, late Friday nights or early Saturday mornings, depending on how you look at it, starting at 1 a.m. on the Voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
This program is brought to you by Miller's Ale House, located at 3046 Hempstead Turnpike, across from the Tri-County Flea Market in Levittown. Open for lunch, dinner, and late night, featuring a full bar 7 days a week, where you can watch all your favorite teams while eating their zingers, wings, a cheeseburger, and more. More information is available at millersalehouse.com or by calling the Levittown location at 516-520-7000. Miller's Ale House of Levittown is a proud supporter of the Voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
Saturday Night Fever. Polyester Suits. The Brady Bunch. When it's time to change, then it's time to change. Bell Bottom Jeans. Cause we gonna boogie, oogie, oogie till your dance can't boogie no more. And the music of the 70s.
Knock three times on the ceiling if you want me.
Join me, Ron Stevens, on the radio, Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. for 2 hours of the decade of Elton John, the Eagles, and disco. The Super 70s, the 70s at 7, Saturday mornings on the Voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC.
Music history. Go ahead. Ask me anything.
What was the number one song this week in 1967?
I don't know. That was like 50 years ago. I guess it was a Beatles song?
Wrong. Roll again.
Okay, music history again. Go.
What was the number one song this week in 1981?
How the heck am I supposed to know this stuff?
You obviously aren't listening to my show, The Hello? Classic Countdown. It's where we count down the biggest hits of the week, but not from this year. We go back in time to the 60s, 70s, and 80s, giving you the biggest hits of the week.
I know I can beat this game. Let me try one more time. I don't believe it. Music history again.
My favorite subject. What was the number one song this week in 1977?
All right, I'll listen. When is it on?
Listen to the Classic Countdown with me, Zach Turkel, Wednesday evenings at 6 on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC, and on the iHeartRadio app. I gotta go get ready for my show. Later.
I guess I win by default. Winning!
All right, we are back with more Modern Mouth Radio, and I do believe headphones. We have
that would help.
Tony, you on the line with us?
Tony,
yes, I am.
Excellent,
hey, Tony.
That was what? Hey. If you saw what we had to go through right now with our new phone system to make that happen, whoa!
Yeah. Now, who's going to clean up that eye of Newt?
I know. Yeah, and the cauldron over here is still boiling, so that's a problem.
Bubble, toil and trouble.
But anyway, Tony, you're on with Ray Guarino, myself, and Joe D.
Hey, Tony.
And
hey, Ray and Joe, how are you guys?
Great. And of course, we have Mr. Tony D'Agostino from Tony's Parts.
Yeah.
And Tony, it's great to have you on. We've been looking forward to this for quite a while.
Oh, thank you.
So tell us, I know, you know, everybody, as well as ourselves, our listeners all got the introduction to you from watching Graveyard Cars, seeing you with Mark Warman.
You're from the Northeast. You never knew me before the show?
Well, you know, I was going to say, unless people had a Mopar, and I did have a Mopar. I had a Challenger convertible, but I sold it back in the 90s. So, and at the time, yeah, I really didn't have to put much stuff into it before I sold it. So it was, I wasn't big into the game. But I'm sure the Mopar guys know you, the Chrysler guys know you. So
Right.
But tell us, you know, you've been in this deal for a long time. Tell us how you got involved.
With the what, the parts or with Graveyard Cars?
Yeah, no, with the parts deal. Like how, because I thought sure okay. people want to know.
Well, I guess I come from a Mopar family. My dad used to race Max Wedges back in the 1960s. And not in cars. He had, well, it was an altered. It wasn't like a production car. It was an altered. He used to run nines back in the 60s. And he also, he raced a 62 Chrysler 300 with a 413 and 2 4-barrel inlines. And he bought brand new a 63 Sport Fury 383 Golden Commando 4-speed car. So he was always into cars, and so he continued on. It wasn't just something when he was young. Matter of fact, my parents dated in my uncle's 32 Ford Roadster that had a 50s Chrysler Hemi in it. Cool. And later on, many years later, I ended up buying the car from my uncle and restored it.
Cool.
Yeah, and my dad still has his 32 Ford Roadster that's currently 440 powered.
Oh, nice. And just to set the stage, you guys were originally New York guys.
Yes, I was born in the Bronx, and that's where my parents are from. And 1969, my parents moved upstate an hour or two to Orange County, to Chester, mm-hmm. Chester, New York.
Okay.
And then I relocated down to Delaware in 1995 after looking for a few years for somewhere to live in Orange County, but just the taxes were so high and property values were escalating, and I would have had to keep moving further north and further away. And my dad had suggested, you know, Delaware, he heard, was more inexpensive to live. And being that my business was a parts business, I just needed to, you know, of course, have a telephone to take orders and be not too far from where a lot of swap meets were to, you know, to go and find parts and whatnot. I couldn't be in Montana or Wyoming because there's not too much population there.
Yeah.
But still being on the East Coast, I was still in the middle of it. I gave up a couple of shows further north, but mm-hmm. started going to more North Carolina shows than I had in the past.
Right, and that's country, man. I mean, now, well, you're talking to two guys who still live south of the bridge, you know, so to speak. You know, we're in southern New York. We're down off, you know, on the island side.
One Guy Land.
Yeah. So we're in the thick of it.
Actually,
and,
I'm Queens.
So yeah.
Technically, that's part of Long Island.
That's true.
Yeah, right. So being coming from a Mopar family, you know, it was in my blood, you could say. And
So a week before my 14th birthday, this is August 1977, I know because I still have the receipt, my dad bought a 70 Roadrunner convertible for me for $500. Now,
nice.
Being a New York,
nice,
yeah, I still own the car, believe it or not. But being a New York car, it had rust on it, and it really needed to be gone through. It wasn't, you know, like a seven-year-old car today. You know, back then they rusted more and whatnot. So anyway, I was still in school, obviously, you know, just being 14, just turning 14. And one of the guys from my auto shop class I went to, and it was a countywide program, is called BOCES.
Oh yeah.
And and you know, people from schools within the county would go to this technical school you know, for learning whatever, you know, whether it be a nurse or welding or what have you. So I went for auto mechanics, and one of the guys a couple towns over had a 7446 barrel GTX that he wanted the motor and trans out of, and I was going to buy the Dana rear end from him to put it in the Roadrunner. And he's like, well, I don't feel like taking it out. Just come up and take the car. So my dad had a tow truck. So we towed this car with the rear end and leaf springs in it back to my dad's shop. I took the rear and leaf springs out, put it in my Roadrunner convertible, and had the body laying behind my dad's body shop at the time. And believe it or not, I ended up selling parts off the car for more than what I paid for it.
Yeah. That's great.
So, yeah, that's where I got the inkling. Well, man, you can make a couple bucks doing this, you know? I never realized you could make a living doing it, believe it or not. It took probably about 12 years before I realized you could make a living doing it.
Yeah.
I just was happy to make some money on the side so I could play with my cars and just sort of flim-flammed with other jobs. Never really had anything, you know, career-minded, but I always seemed to make enough money between the car parts and my other jobs to make an okay living, you know?
Yeah. You know, Tony, Joe and I were just talking about that before the show, and I said how, you know, if that 70, if the GTX was still around, that thing would be worth its weight in gold these days, because they're very desirable.
The GTX!
But we both agreed that we had both done the same thing. We had taken many cars apart to sacrifice them for other cars, and I kind of said to Joe, I said, yeah, if you didn't do that, you didn't live it, you know. You weren't
exactly
there.
Exactly. You know, like you said, if you weren't, if you don't, if you, you know, if you remember, you really weren't there.
Yeah, I mean, that was just what we did, you know. And at that time, now that was only like less than a 10-year-old car, so
right. That's you know what it was. The first gas crisis in '73 took its toll, and the second gas crisis of '77.
Yeah.
That's when the values went down of all the V8 cars, especially the high performance cars, and that's why the kids had them, you know, like me. You know, I had the car through high school and whatnot. Everybody knew me by the car, and you know, it was sort of like that movie Dazed and Confused, you know.
Yes,
same kind of
cars.
That, classic.
You know,
yes.
Favorite. I got to tell you something. Just since you evoke that memory, last weekend I was at my daughter's place for a Super Bowl party, and some of the and they're all like, just hitting 30, just around 30 years old, a little younger. And a couple of the guys, one of the guys had mentioned, he spouted a line from Dazed and Confused. I said, hey, let me tell you something. I said, I lived that movie. I said, I said the guys that were going to the new group that was going to be seniors that year that the movie was about, I said, I was actually a year before them. Like, you know, I was...
Right,
you know,
okay.
I said, but that was my life. So we started trading movie lines, and I'm thinking, I'm smiling, saying, here I am talking to guys who are like, you know, 30 years old, spouting lines from a movie about 1976, like 70s from the Bicentennial. I'm like, that's cool.
It certainly
is.
But, very, very good. Very good.
Those were legendary times.
Oh, absolutely.
And we survived them.
So it was, you know, I ended up having a race car. It was a 69 Roadrunner. It was a 383 car. But, you know, started off as a street car, but little by little it got down to be a super street class, like a 1090 index that would run.
Okay.
And, yeah, had that for a long time. Sold it to a friend of mine in Rockland County. He still owns the car today, you know. So.
Yeah. So, well, another thing we were talking about, Tony, that you, of course, would know very well is, you know, we all watch the auctions and TV shows, and obviously, you know, everything old is new again. But how strong is the restoration hobby?
It is really strong, but I think it's ready to have a change coming up. And what I mean by that is, if you know, you mentioned the auctions, look at the average age of the guys at the auction. Mm-hmm. Either they got white hair or they're dying it.
That's right.
You know, gray hair or they're dying. And, you know, voluntary or involuntarily, people are aging out of the hobby, I feel. And I think I mean, it's still busy, so I don't see it happening anytime real soon, but it's going to start heading towards that way. People are, nicest way to put it, aging out.
Right.
And there's going to be some collections of cars or some cars or some parts available out there. And it's already happening now. You know, I'm sure we all know of people that have either given up because of their age or passed away and now their family is taking right. care of it. And there's not a lot of younger people behind us, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, there's not many below 50. I mean, you go to, you know, some of the bigger swap meets and you look around or... And they're just not into these cars. Yeah, they might have some modern cars, which is, you know, they're great on their own. I mean,
yeah.
they do a lot of things our old muscle cars can't. I mean, we can go fast. They can go really fast and stop and turn and have air conditioning and a warranty.
And get good gas mileage.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, so
if I can add to your thought on the auctions, because we've all pondered and talked about this a lot. I've talked to a lot of younger guys, not a lot, but enough. And there was one definitive group that gave me the answer many years ago. And we asked them, why are you building what you're building? Why don't you build, you know, classic muscle cars? And they said, we can't afford them. You guys have them all and you won't let them go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, you're right. But now you could buy a Model A. That was an award winner, a class award winner, you know, 20 years ago. You could buy that car right now for $8,000, $7,000. Because the guys, like you said, the guys who were in with them and loved them in stock form have aged out and they're gone. So,
right.
Yeah, it's always multifaceted when you look at a problem like that. So,
sure.
Yeah, but it's even so, it's like my son, he's 21. He likes the cars, but he's not into them.
Yeah.
You know, and he could have. I mean, I did have a couple of cars set aside for him, but I wanted him to work on them, and it just wasn't in him. You know, I mean, he's doing great. He's in the Army. He just got back from a tour over in Syria, you know.
Great.
And, he's just not into the car thing. You know, like he likes them, but it's not something, that he's into. And I'm not the only one. There's an awful lot of guys I know that are into it, and their kids, you could care less, really. So it's not something that's traveling down. Like I said, even at the swap meets, you go and, I mean, it's just about nobody below 40, you know. So.
Well, that's the thing, that you were lucky to have a dad that had a tow truck when you were growing up, which was gold. Imagine if any of us had a dad who had a restoration business. Oh, my God, I wouldn't be climbing through junkyard piles trying to find your stuff. You'd be like, hey, Dad, I need, here's my list.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, motor lawn.
Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah, back then, and we had only original stuff available. I mean, reproduction parts didn't even start into the mid to late 80s, and they were just pretty generic things like stickers, stripes,
badges,
fuel lines, and carpets, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You know, interesting you said, because now you guys, as Tony's Parts, you manufacture like 100 different parts. Is that correct under your own?
Yes, yeah.
Tell us about that.
In the early 2000s, attrition really started taking its toll on finding the parts. You know, I used to be out probably 40 weekends a year, well, not even 40 weekends, 30 plus weekends a year, sometimes going to two different swap meets a weekend, chasing down parts. I mean, besides going to people's houses, I go to swap meets, I mean, as far west as, I've been to California, but that was only a few times, but I go as far south as Florida, as far north as, Massachusetts, and as far west as Minnesota, ooh. You know, to track down parts. I mean, I used to go to Ohio 7 times a year at one point.
Wow.
And little by little, it just got to be where it didn't make dollars and cents to go. And it happened slowly, like anything does, but it got to be where now I don't even go but to just a handful of swap meets anymore looking for parts. Of course, if I get a call from somebody and they have a decent load of parts, I'd be interested. But what was happening was the stuff was getting used up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the cars were very popular, and they were getting, and the parts were getting used up because more and more cars were getting restored that never would have been parted out 5 or 10 or 15 years earlier. So I saw the need for, well, I'm not going to keep being able to find the used original or NOS parts like we have, so I'm going to get into manufacturing. And I really feel I have my finger on the pulse on that a lot better than a lot of the companies that just make reproduction parts, because they truly don't know how hard it is or isn't to find an original part. They just know what they get a request for. And if you get 40 guys together from the Slant Six Valiant Club to call up for apart for a 63 Valiant, they're going to think there's a market for it. Yeah. And unfortunately, there's not. It is the 40 guys and maybe another 10, but you need to make stuff that's going to sell quantities because anything that's made in the reproduction world is considered low volume. And that's one of the reasons why Mopars were the last ones in the game for getting reproduction parts, because if you were making parts for a 69 Camaro, you could make a run of 10,000.
Yeah.
You know, and be fine. Matter of fact, there's two or three different manufacturers that make 69 Camaro grills. Yeah. But for Mopars, we had to wait to come along later until the values of the parts went up high enough where it justified making the reproduction part, because a lot of times a run, you know, you're looking at, you know, 500, maybe 1,000 sometimes on a run of an item, just because we don't have the quantity of vehicles out there that the GM world does or Mustangs do. Mm-hmm. So we had to wait till the values went up where we could absorb the tooling cost into the part. So I get to see, you know, what parts I know are tough to find by hitting the swap meets and always out scouring the countryside looking for these parts. So I really know what's hard to find, and it gives me a better handle on what's worthwhile reproducing or not.
What's can you give us a hint of typically what type of parts those are that you've deemed were worthy of being...
Sure. Well, like one of the first things we made was consoles for the B-body cars.
Okay.
It fits 67 to 70 B-body, and they're made out of plastic. They're just about always cracked or broken. Mm. So the people with cars originally that had them need replacements, and that's also a part that people like to add to cars.
Yeah.
You know, because more and more what's happened throughout the years is a lot of the muscle cars got fixed, and now people are... building, if you want to call them clones or tributes, whatever, they'll take a nice two-door satellite and make it like a Roadrunner or put a console in it and stuff like that.
A lot of that going around.
And that's the thing. One of the cars that always surprised me growing up, I always kind of looked over my shoulder at it, was like, damn, why do all these Mopars have bench seats and column shifts? Because we ran predominantly GMs, we always got bucket seats and floor shifts. And I always wondered about that. You know, the rubber mats, where's the carpet?
Yeah,
But that's the way it was. So
that was the entry-level car. GTXs came standard with bucket seats, but the Roadrunner, you couldn't even get bucket seats its first year of production.
Right.
In 1968, it really surprised Mopar with the success of the Roadrunner. I mean, they had no idea it was going to be. Matter of fact, the Super B wasn't even offered in the beginning of 68 because they didn't see a need for it. Dodge didn't, but after the success of Roadrunner, they came out with the Super B mid-model year.
Uh-huh.
Right.
But anyway, the Roadrunner, they didn't even offer it in a hard top until mid-68. They were just offering it in a cheap coupe model.
Yeah.
And that's all, that's all they had it offered. And by later in the year, they had the hard top, and the following year, they had a convertible.
Yeah.
You know, and then bucket seats and, you know, the whole deal there. So it's like the car took them by surprise. I think they made... they made over 80,000 Roadrunners in 1969, so that was one of their leading cars.
Should I send Mark a text and verify that? Because Mark is a good friend of ours. He's been on the show a number of times over the years. He's very gracious, gives us a lot of his time, and explains what's going on. And of course, and everybody, ourselves included, love to see the two of you guys get together and do what you do, because you have two forces now that come together, and it's like two big dogs in the yard. And you say, "Wow, it's it's good to see that it's
unstoppable force."
Oh yeah, we have a good banter going back and forth. The guys out there and the production crew, they're good at what they do, but they don't know the Mopar stuff, so nobody can give Mark a hard time. So they love it when I come out and I give them a hard time.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, funny you brought that up. I'm going to be on, not this Tuesday, the 12th, but the next three episodes I'll be on the 19th, the 26th, and over March 5th.
Excellent, excellent.
So, it'll give you an extra reason to watch me and Mark battling it out there over some stuff.
Are you going to be documenting another car, or is it going to be over a restoration in progress? Is it something you can spill?
We're talking about some differences in model years of cars, comparing one to another, and I can't let the cat out of the bag on this one, but there is a factory mistake that I've never seen or heard of anything like this before, and it's just something it's beyond imagination.
Wow, okay.
And, it's something to tune in for, and I think that's coming up in two or three episodes.
Okay,
but it's something that really raised my eyebrows when I saw it.
We'll have to tune in, keep tuned in to Graveyard Cars on Tuesday nights and check that out.
Yeah, you got me curious.
And it's, you know, it's great because even guys that I know that aren't Mopar fans really like that show. And, you know, and I think it is because of the way Mark does it, the production company, he makes it. He throws in his kitschy stuff, and, you know, people, of course, they slam him over his dancing and his stuff, and other people love it. You know, I think it's great. I think it's a good balance. It really kind of, it keeps you guessing is what it does, you know?
I am so surprised at the outreach of that show, even, like you said, non-Mopar people. Hey, here's an example. Yeah. The school bus driver that used to live in the house that we own now, you know, local family farmers here, and he's probably close to 80. He watches Graveyard Cars.
Wow.
And he's a farmer. He doesn't have an old car or anything. He just watches it.
Okay.
You know, there's a couple people local like that. Just, I never asked them if they watched the show. They came to me, and the people I would never expect. They're not like car people or anything. It really...
No fool.
Even, I know somebody that met a couple people in Turkey, and they watched the show.
Wow.
No, wow.
It's crazy.
Well, you know, speaking of Turkey, now you are forever branded with Philly cheesesteak. You know that.
Oh, you had to bring that up, didn't you?
I'm sorry, but you brought up Turkey, so, and I'm getting hungry. But... No, I think your bigger problem is probably being a displaced New Yorker for so many years. You just can't get good coffee, bagels, and pizza anymore. But that's beside the point, you know. You said that.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Once you get out of this, that radius of about maybe 50 miles, you're kind of screwed. Yeah.
I miss Arthur Avenue.
Oh, Arthur Avenue, hell yeah, the best. Yeah. See, like we would have hit Mark with that one. But we knew he wouldn't. He had no basis of comparison because he's not from out this way.
Mark comes up with stuff. He just shoots off the hip. I was like, Mark, I've had two Philly cheesesteaks in my life. It's Cheese Whiz. You know, I mean, come on. It's,
right.
It's not even anything that special, I don't think. You
but
know?
Now you are forever branded because that's what TV does. You know?
Yes,
it's worse
absolutely.
Things to be branded, that's for sure.
Hey, there's worse things is right. That's absolutely
I guess.
Right. Yeah. So among...
Here's another one. You brought that up and people watching the show. There's a lady, she works at the bank. I've known her. Well, since I moved here, she's been at the bank. She's a manager now. And I had sent her an email about something to do with my account. She responds with, yeah, but you don't forget to save money for your next Philly cheesesteak.
Oh,
boy.
See,
I had no idea that she even watched the show or knew about it.
There you go. I'm telling you, when stuff happens on TV, you get branded with it forever. And it's kind of cool, but it can be a detriment, too, because it was just a bit. You know, it was just a...
Yeah, what if you were vegan or something?
Yeah.
I don't think I'd fit the clothes I do if I was a vegan.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool stuff. Right? And, you know, our good buddy, Jeep and Al, he's another displaced New Yorker who's living out of state. He was wondering if you entertain your rabid fans like at Carlisle, if you ever go to a meet like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's one of the... We only vend at two swap meets a year, the Mopar Nationals in Ohio and then the Chrysler Carlisle event in July. And, it's great. People come over all the time. They mention the show. They want to say hello. You know, of course, to buy parts is the main reason why I'm there. I always like vending at the shows because it's a mail order business, you know. So I can have customers that I've spoken to on the phone for years but never see them face to face. And when they stop by to swap and say, hey, I'm Joe so-and-so. I bought parts. Oh, it's like, it's really nice to see the person and, you know, and have more
of
a connection with them than just a voice, you know.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. Well, I'm sure you'll see Al. He's big in the Mopar game. I'm sure you'll catch him in July because he'll find you. So that's cool stuff.
Yeah, cool. That's great.
So what else? You know, this hour is flying by. We are really burning time like crazy. I looked at the clock. I was like, whoa, what happened? We're kind of moving. What else? Like I had told you in our previous conversation, some emails. A lot of times we don't finish an interview on the first pass. We may have to get you back for a second go around. I don't think we've really gotten halfway into what some of the stuff we want to talk about. What do you want to get out there, Tony? Is there anything you want to share with the listeners?
You know, we're always coming out with new reproduction parts. Like, like ashtrays for the dashes, the inserts, you know, where you put your butts out in them and it leaves a stain, or they sit throughout the years and get water condensation, they're all rusty. Now for just about all the Mopars, you know, the 60s and early 70s, we make new inserts, they come with the rivets, you put them in. Another big thing we saw a need for was the power steering couplers. They connect the steering column to the box. Many of the cars, like you were mentioned, were like bare bones stripper cars, and they came with manual columns. Well, you need a, you know, you need the correct coupler when you're changing over, and a lot of times the couplers fall off the columns because they're really not secured onto the column too well. So we're making new couplers. They should be out. They should be here within the next month or so. We got some 70-71 big block high performance exhaust manifolds.
Nice.
They're in production right now, so they'll be here within the next couple of months. And said we're always listening for what's needed and looking for the next good idea, you know?
That is great. Do you,
I'm looking at your website now. Vacuum advances, jacks.
Yeah, I'm thinking electrical stuff is always an issue. And that's the thing that always freaked me out about Chrysler, is having full current through an ammeter in a dashboard. Oh, boy. Being an electrical guy, that always scared me.
I'll be honest with you. Electrical stuff is one thing I stay away from because the electrical stuff that's out there, a lot of it's problematic. I hear it from customers, you know, excessive fuel tank sending units and turn single switches. They're made, but they're just, and part of the problem is, like I was mentioning, the quantities. If they were going to make 10,000 of them, they could get them probably tuned in a lot better, but they're making, I'm sure, much smaller runs, you know, and when you're doing that, sometimes you just, you can't put that much money into them. And it's just, I hear a lot of problems with that stuff, so I'm gun-shy, and I try not to make things that have potential problems. So
understandable,
that's why I avoid the electrical stuff, even though I know some of it still needs to be made. But
the good thing with that is I used for my own project called my Pontiac, there's a guy upstate New York who rebuilds sending units.
Yes.
So I used him.
Yep.
I said, you know what, I'd rather have the original one in the car anyway. And,
sure.
So there are people out. Yeah. That's
smart move. That's really the way to go. There's somebody that rebuilds them in the Mopar world, and I'm sure they're the same thing. I mean, geez, it's just a float moving up and down, making contact.
And it's just a variable resistor.
It's just a wound resistor. Right. That's all it is, right? So, well, that's the thing. You know, you mentioned electricity to a lot of people, and I think it's black science. So that's and those people should stay away from it. You know, that's the way it should be. You know, don't get in over your head. That's for darn sure. But
next thing you know, you put something out there, it shorts out and burns a valuable car to the ground.
Oh, sure, you know. I've heard of that happening. You don't want anything bad to happen to somebody's car. You don't want to have the issue to deal with the problem. You know, it's like, you know, it's very rare that something happens, but fortunately, I could say, Jesus, just about never happened. So, you know, we don't have to deal with it. I mean, the biggest thing we've had problems with is stuff being misboxed a few times, but not as really far as the part giving out. Like, we make fan clutches. Mm-hmm. Excuse me. They got to be pretty tough to find that weren't leaking, weren't loose, or were just missing. So,
they were crappy.
It's made by a company that. I'm sorry?
They were kind of crappy to begin with back in the day. They were a high failure rate item on anybody's car.
Mm. Right. But now we get them made by a company that all they do is make fan clutches. So, they just made it to our external specs so it looks like they did from the factory, you know?
Nice. Yeah, that's the way to do it. You know, that's when you can seek out that manufacturer who does that one thing, you can get a much better part. That's fantastic.
Right, yeah, because they're not reinventing the wheel, so.
Right, right. And, they're tooled up. They have all the, we talk about that all the time, about offshore stuff. I mean, that's another, we could go on for hours about that, but that's, it always comes up because we all work on stuff. And, you know, I do secondary work at a shop that works on a lot of older cars. So I just had to put a sending unit in a Buick and I was, it's an aftermarket one. And I said, well, let's see if we get a year out of it, you know.
Yeah, seriously.
But I saved the old one. I put it in a box. I put it on a shelf and I labeled it. So in case we got to do that again, we're going to send that one out and have it rebuilt.
Yeah, you know, and having stuff made offshore, I mean, that's a big blanket to throw on everything, and I felt the same way too, but I also realized, being in manufacturing, that they'll only make what you allow them to.
Oh, yeah.
If your spec is higher, well, then it's going to be higher. If you require things to be a certain way, they'll build it to that.
Right.
You know, they may try to build it. I'm going to say no. I mean, the best thing to say is we're making a counterfeit. Of course, it's not a counterfeit, but we want an exact copy. Right, not something that just looks the same, not something that functions the same. It's got to be both. It's got to look the same and function the same. Right. So,
well, that's it. People don't realize that there's a lot that goes on before you get that box in the store. It might have been made like crap over there, but maybe, like you said, maybe that the spec wasn't conveyed at the high enough level.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know the whole story.
Sometimes you try to, you know, the price tries to get chiseled down by the seller, and next thing you know, it's like, yeah, can you make this for $1 less? And meanwhile, now that
sure we can,
absolutely,
we'll take out the gold contact. We'll take out the brass, and we'll put in some yellow metal. You know,
yeah exactly right. You're exactly right. You know,
yeah, but that's it.
Yeah, you get what you pay for.
Yeah. That's a good. I found that's always whether it's in house stuff or, you know, car stuff. If you pay a little more of a premium, you're going to get a better product.
Right. Well, I always try to keep cost in mind. If something's too expensive to make, I'm not going to make it. In my eyes, the reason why a part needs to get made is because it's hard to find, and or it's too expensive.
Right.
So now you're going to make it. Now they're not going to be hard to find. But if they're going to be still too expensive, then what did you accomplish?
Right.
You know, so maybe that's being a hobbyist, but that's just, no, it's like if we're going to make something, of course, you know, we're going to make it right. We're going to make it accessible, but it also needs to be affordable, or else you didn't really accomplish much, you know. And
exactly.
It's a tough thing to balance, because I'd love to sell stuff cheaper, but I can't for it to make dollars and cents sometimes, you know.
Sure. It's a fine line to walk. It really is, because you want to make something. It's very easily to go overboard or underboard. Next thing you know, that you know, you make something that's really beautiful. It's as good, if maybe even better than the original equipment. But now it's like twice the price of, like, say, maybe somebody finding a new old stock piece.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of self-defeating. That's
yeah,
for sure.
And sometimes you just got to pass. There are certain projects that I just turned down, you know. And another thing you have to keep in mind, and this is, you know, sort of you learn from being in the business, I can't reach everybody. I'm not a one-stop for reproduction parts, and I know I don't reach everybody. So you also have to have a wholesale program built in. Yeah. So some of the big companies, you know, Year One, Classic Industries, and, you know, at least a dozen other companies buy from me my products. Mm-hmm. So you also have to have enough of a padding on there where you could sell to them at a discount and still make some money.
Sure.
Right, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Because, like I said, it'd be great if I could reach everybody, but I'm not, you know, and it's unrealistic to think different, so.
True. Yeah, for whatever reason, they prefer dealing with a certain, you know, a certain company, a certain individual or whatever, because they've been doing it for years or whatever.
But it's also, so I'm not a one-stop. Like, you know, some of the bigger companies might have 5,000 items.
Right.
You know, yeah, my 100 items plus stuff that they make or they buy from 50 other vendors.
Right.
You know, I only carry the stuff I make pretty much. I mean, there's a couple items I have that aren't mine, but I only carry the reproduction parts that I make.
Right. Makes sense. You know. All right, Tony, well, we're going to have to go. We thank you for spending this time with us. It was a fantastic interview.
Excellent.
I would love to have you back to talk more, because I don't think, like I said, that we've really we can keep going with this, but unfortunately we only get an hour to do it. So
sure.
So I'll be in touch with you and I'll reach out and we'll see if we can find another date.
Yeah, it was great, guys. Thanks a lot. Good talking with you guys. I look forward to doing it again.
Excellent. Yeah, and I will play you out with the music I was supposed to play you in with, and then we'll be in touch,
but
Tony.
Pushing buttons.
And we'll
get that phone system straightened out next time.
Yeah, we'll work on it. It's brand new.
Yeah. Thanks, we have to go take a course here at the college for that.
All right, Tony. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you soon.
You're welcome. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. That was Tony D'Agostino from tonysparts.com. So let's play him out with the music we were supposed to play him in with. We'll take a quick break, and then we're going to be getting out of here, Joe, on 90.3
WHPC.
Stick shifts and safety belts.
Mopar, no car. No one can beat us. Mopar, no car. You can't beat us.
Shake off the realities of the day, broaden your musical horizons, and embrace the diversity every Monday afternoon at 6 on Revelations. The show offers a potently unique collection of music with an emphasis on themes and rock rarities. An occasional tour de force of blues and soul mixed with compelling sets of folk and folk rock. I'm Steve Kay, and I've got the perfect soundtrack for your drive home every Monday afternoon at 6 on Revelations, right here on the voice of Nassau Community College, 90.3 WHPC. Please stay tuned for Motormouth Radio on Sundays at 12 noon, every Sunday, exclusively on WHPC. Join the Motormouths, Ray Guarino and Joe D. Features, information, guest interviews, tech tips, and all your call-in questions on all topics relating to automobiles. And these guys know their stuff. In case you haven't heard this show, not only is it very informative, it is hilarious at times. A lot of call-ins and a lot of crazy people calling in with problems with their cars. And, okay, Joe and Ray offering their expert opinion on these things and doing it in a somewhat comical fashion.
Well, it was comical because we're hitting the wrong buttons on Motormouth Radio as usual, but
yeah,
we were playing...
Somebody snuck in and switched the labels on when you weren't looking.
No, I just pushed the wrong button. We're looking to play the Mopar song for Tony, of course, and I hit the cake song. But what the heck? Yeah, cake.
Yeah.
Cake.
See, you're killing me here. You know, I know it's almost on the end. Now I'm thinking about cake, cannolis. You know,
nice.
I just gained 9 pounds just listening to you. You know?
I know, right? Yeah. Well, that was great. You know, if you're late tuning into the show, you missed our interview with Tony D'Agostino, catch it on our website, Motormouth Radio, which should be up sometime by tomorrow.
Very informative.
And you can listen to it or download it as a podcast and do with it as you wish. And I think we'll get Tony back on because we really...
That was fun.
We had more to talk about.
But let's see. You know, we'll just have to start looking at the calendar. You know,
I gotta say, I'm looking at the calendar right now. And next week, we're rolling it right in. We're doing a 1-2 punch for the listeners. Next week, we have Mr. Dan Short on the phone, who was the chief in charge from
Phantom Works. Yeah, click. Yeah,
right.
Okay.
So Dan is our guest next week. We're rolling on with the TV stuff here. So that's.
Yeah,
that's cool. And then we're booking
TV, radio, multimedia.
Yeah, we got
nationwide.
We got to find somebody for after that. I don't know who that's going to be yet, but we'll find somebody.
Yeah, there's always somebody floating around. I got a couple ideas. I got to go make some phone calls.
Good.
You never know who's going to wander in, folks. So just be prepared. Actually, don't be prepared. It's more fun that way. Because we're not.
I always say, you know, you open the door and influenza.
Yeah.
So you never know what's going to happen around here.
We'll come up with some good stuff. And if not, though, you know, sometimes we'll just talk to each other. And ends up being...
Yes, we can convey the... you know, the one thing I want to mention that we have a few minutes is that carburetor that you gave me last week to do for the 74 Corvette.
Yes, thank you. That thing is amazing.
And, it's to me, I looked at it like a timepiece because it had orange overspray on it from when they sprayed the engine.
Right.
And I was like, damn, this thing has to kind of remain almost like restoration quality.
Yes, we have to try to keep that as intact as possible. That car, the more I look at it, I mean, it's been kind of to the back burner now for a couple of weeks because of other stuff taking precedence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more pressing repairs and stuff like that. But
right.
I'm surprised. I mean, you know, those funky clips... You know what I mean? And just right. like the, you know, this tags, you know, and stuff that you don't normally see in a car that age. That's usually been...
Case in point, there's a tag on that carburetor, and Billy G knew what it was. It's like paper, but not paper. It's not cardboard. It's not vinyl. It's like a very robust paper.
Right.
Usually carburetors have metal tags on them.
Yes.
And on the bottom, it's green with some stretch. And, like, this thing is a factory tag that I've never, ever seen before. Because back in the day when those things were new, I was just taking them and putting them on other cars. And, you know, we were getting them out of junkyards and just throwing them on. You know,
yeah, it's like, hey, will this fit? We only need to use the 5-pound hammer? Okay, good.
Good enough.
Yeah, let's roll. So let's roll with it.
You'll see pictures of that if you follow us on Instagram. Look at real_MotormouthRadio and on Motormouth Radio on Twitter and on Facebook, because I'm going to put those pictures up a little later today and you can see what I was talking about. And, yeah, until then, we're winding down. We're going to get out of here and we'll go talk amongst ourselves.
Well, let's face it. Who do we have coming next?
Like I said, Dan Short from
Phantom. No.
Who's that person twiddling
your...
We have Short Kim.
Board there.
Well, Dan Short.
No, you're not.
But compared to some of the other guys around here, you know. Yes.
I don't know. Kim is on the road. Everybody's taller than me, so.
Absolutely. So, yeah, people do stay tuned for Thunder Road.
Thunder Road.
They love Kim's show, and as they should. So, yeah, with so that.
You picked up a few listeners amongst our crew.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Whether you like it or not. So, with that, we're going to say, see you. We're out of here on 90.3.
WHPC.
Bye.
Bye.